the thrust of what we've said about Proverbs is that it's a book that doesn't really have much of an organization to it. It just seems like it's a statement here, a statement there, a statement here, a statement there. So I have a hard time finding an overarching theme that I can apply to the book, but what we're going to discuss today is from the third chapter, verses 5 and 6. And the first part of Proverbs, if there is an overarching theme, has to do with some instruction for a young man that I think is probably coming from a man who is his father's figure. So in the first part of Proverbs, you see a lot of advice to a young man, or at least that's the way it's framed. This is what it says in Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. So it seems to me that there are several ideas here. The first is trust the Lord. Don't trust other men. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and it will go well for you. Those seem to be the four big ideas. So let's talk about trusting God. My approach to issues of trust is that there are two components to trust. One is an external component, the other is an internal component. Now, Kim flew in, landed at Eugene Airport last night. She wasn't very considerate and decided to fly in during the USC Oregon game. I told her I was going to pick her up. She trusted that I was going to be there. That trust has an external component and an internal component. The external component dealt with things that were external to Kim. She had trust in part because she knew me. And I said I was going to be there to pick her up. And fortunately, I remember. I have forgotten that kind of thing in the past. But there's that external component, and there's an internal component. She, because she trusted me, was willing to get her suitcases and walk out the door. So let's think about that in terms of trusting in God. And that's a much broader idea. There are external components and internal components. External component, it's who God is. Any thoughts about why that's so important? Knowing who God is part of trust. Yeah, Ted.
We often see when we're talking about God in general, this idea that there's the God of the Old Testament, the God of the New Testament. There's some difference between those. But when you take the Bible as a whole, you see that God is who he is. His frame of mind is determination for us did not change at all. The way he interacted with people changed somewhat because of his will being revealed in part in antiquity and fully revealed for everything he wanted to know about. But what we can learn from that is God doesn't change. What he expects of us is exactly what he's always expected.
Okay. Yeah, Carol.
Part of the trust somebody, you must know them. And the more intimately and widely you know them, the more you can trust them. So you might just know his grace and his forgiveness to start off with. But as you grow as a Christian, you, in times of trial, you learn his strength, the strength of the body, and you learn his love, and that love keeps growing. And so the more you know him, the more you trust.
Okay. This used to work. This worked better when everybody carried a Bible with them. Okay. I don't carry a Bible anymore. How many people read their Bible on their phone or their device like I do? Old eyes, I need the magnification. Okay. But I used to be able to say, pick up your Bible and look at the edge right here. You can, generally speaking, tell where the New Testament starts because that's where the pages get dirty. Right? Everybody's made that observation. In fact, sometimes you start reading in the Old Testament, and this is really embarrassing. You have to pull the pages apart because they're still stuck together right there on the edge, the way that it came from the publisher. We don't spend as much time in the Old Testament as we do in the New. And there's good reason for that. I don't discount spending time in the New Testament. But one of the reasons that we wanted to read through the chronological Bible for Breakfast Club this year was to make sure that we familiarized ourselves with what was going on in the Old Testament, because that's where you see the stories, the way that God dealt with people. You don't see that quite as much in the New Testament. The New Testament tends to be a little bit more, what's a good word for it? Theological. A little bit more explanation of God's expectations of us. The Old Testament has the hero stories. And God, of course, God is always the hero, right? But it has the story of how David relied on God and that close association. And that's what let him go out and face Goliath. So you need to know who God is. And you're just going to have to read about who he is through the pages of the Bible. And sometimes we get the impression that God is somebody that he's really not. Now, a lot of people's impression of God comes from Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments. Okay? God is this being that's up in heaven, and he sends this lightning bolt around the mountain and scares Moses to death. And we sometimes think that's real, that's God. And I had a friend who said that we get our information about God from three sources. One is Charlton Heston and the Ten Commandments. The second one is what we heard when we were little guys that we remember hearing in Bible classes that we went to. And the third is from our own reading. So we need to just be a little bit more aware of who God is. You have to trust God. And I like what Ted said. He's the same. He has never changed. And of course, I think that means a lot when we come to understanding Jesus and where he is now. He's God, and he doesn't change either. Jesus had compassion for people when he was here. He's in heaven now. He's pleading our case. He still has that same compassion. Okay. I think that's really critical. Before you can trust God, you really have to know God. That would be like him suggesting that she's going to trust somebody to pick her up at the airport that she's never met. It's always a little hard, isn't it? I don't know if you've ever been there. You fly into a strange airport that you've never been to. You don't know who's going to pick you up at the airport. And you hope that somebody shows up with a sign that says cruise on it. Or, you know, says Carter or something like that. So you'll know who it is that's supposed to pick you. There's always this fear that they're not going to be there, right? So we have to know who God is if we're going to trust him. Then there's the internal component to trusting God. And I think in some ways that's a little harder to manage. Do you really trust God? Or is it kind of a trust but verify? You know, somebody says, I will do this. And there's this kind of question that arises within me that says, I'm not sure whether I want to believe that or not. I'll be there. Yeah, okay. I'm not gonna trust that a whole lot. That's an internal component. And that's a little hard to manage. And I think part of that comes from knowing that God sees and he rewards obedience. We think of obedience sometimes the way that we think about obedience with a dog. I tell my dog down. Sometimes she does, sometimes she doesn't. But, you know, I sometimes think we think about obedience that way. God says, do this, and I have to do it. When we ought to be thinking about the internal component of obedience a little bit more. Comments? Thoughts? Anybody at home? Yeah, Carol.
I think that internal trust is shaped an awful lot by our life experiences. In other words, somebody who didn't have a father they could trust, they're going to have more difficulty. Somebody who had somebody who they were supposed to believe that they said something that they would go ahead and do it, and they never did. Those kinds of things that are in your life, that's where you have that internal war between the trust of knowing the person and what your life has experienced for you.
Okay, good point. I really feel for people who grew up in families where they didn't have the loving parents. You know, what's it like to grow up with an alcoholic father? You come home from school and you never know whether he's going to throw something at you or he's going to hug you. And I've talked to kids that were like that, that it's very, very difficult for them to build that trust relationship. Just the internal component to that isn't there. And it's hard to learn. Yeah, well.
That carries on to the day you die, too. A person who hasn't experienced that with their spouse or themselves has no idea what a horrible thing that lack of trust is.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to explain that to people. It's hard for people to overcome that, the internal component to trust. Okay. If anybody knows how to do that, let me know. But I had adopted a dog one time who had been abused. And it seemed like every time you reached out your hand to pet the dog, the pet cowered. And that was an internal, I had never in any way mistreated that dog. That's the external component. But the internal component was something that that dog was dragging with it for its entire life. And never did really overcome that.
It's the same way with people.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe even magnified because they cannot trust anyone ever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Even when we know, yeah, we intellectually know, but we just can't manage to create that within ourselves. So this is an important part of trusting in God. Now, he contrasts the trust you have in God with the trust you have in men. So don't, while it is entirely reasonable to trust God, trusting men is a lot more difficult. And part of that comes from the external considerations. So we have, again, when we talk about trusting other people, we have external and internal. The external considerations when it comes to trusting men is in part influenced by the fact that we make mistakes. How many of us made terrible mistakes on occasion when we were raising our kids? Okay. I did. I was doing the best I could. But I made some horrible mistakes. And I promised my kids, you know, I will do this. And then I forgot. Or it just wasn't quite as important to me as it turned out to be to my kids. So I didn't do it. Men, I think, in general, do the very best that they can. And when I say men, I mean men and women. People do the very best that they can, but they make mistakes. Somebody want to read Hebrews 12 at verse 10? This is in the context of the discussion of the discipline that comes from God, and he compares it to the discipline that comes from our parents. So this Hebrews 12 at verse 10 focuses on the discipline that comes from our parents.
Discipline does for a short time the same death to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his soul.
Okay. Comment. What do you think he's saying?
Even though we need to
obey our parents,
God's discipline, we don't obey
it, can affect
us,
and
in our life.
Yeah. And God will never let you down. Men do. The unfortunate thing is, as Christians, we sometimes let people down. And they make the mistake of thinking that because I let them down, God let them down. So that means that for us as Christians, it's so very important that we don't let people down. We do our best, but we have to go even beyond the kind of thing that you encourage parents to do. We have to be so careful. And the fact is that we're just different from God. Somebody want to read Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9?
For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than the earth, my thoughts higher than the earth.
I like that translation. That makes it really understandable. We're not like God. How do you see men as being not like God? Even though we do our best, how are men not like God?
One thing, we all have to start from where we're at. We've been talking a little bit about raising kids. Well, depending on what kind of family you all came from, and same with your wife, when you have your first child, you're starting from where you're at. And then you have to move from there.
Yeah. Good point. And, you know, my first child was the trainer. Poor Mandy. She had to endure all of the mistakes that I made, and I got it all right when I dealt with Jenny. No, it doesn't work that way. Carol?
I was just going to say that as man may discipline or do something, but they make an error. God, whenever God is involved in your life, he always means good for you, and he never does anything for you that's not good. Even when he doesn't answer a prayer, it's for your good.
Right. Right. Somebody over here had their hand up, I think. Did I see something out of the corner of my eye? God has infinite wisdom. And my wisdom is very limited. I do my best, but my wisdom is just limited. That's the fact of the matter. So when he says, don't trust men, it could be that the external circumstances are just not such that they warrant that kind of trust. And there is also this, men only have very limited power to influence the course of events. Any parent ever been in that position? Something happens and you would do anything to change that course of events. But you can't. Somebody's a jerk to your daughter, and you would love to be able to influence the course of events, but you can't. You just, not only do you not have the wisdom to know how to do it, you don't have the power to do it. And I feel like sometimes having the power would be kind of a mistake if we didn't have all of the wisdom that God has. Does anybody see that movie where Carrie becomes the What's the name of it?
Bruce Almighty.
Yeah, Bruce Almighty. And he thinks, oh, it's not raining. There's a drought. So he makes it rain. Oh, well, that didn't work out all that well because he couldn't see all of the ramifications that were going to happen if he made it rain in California. What was going to happen in Oklahoma? So you having the power to influence events without having the wisdom to be able to see everything that was going to happen would be a very dangerous thing. And I think in some ways I'm kind of glad that I don't have the power to change the course of events because I don't have the wisdom to know how to do it. Internal considerations. And we've talked about this when we were talking about the internal considerations that relate to God. There's the internal considerations that relate to other men. Have you ever trusted somebody that you shouldn't have trusted because they intentionally let you down? We call those scams. Okay. And I've fallen for them. Poor Ted had to come down here and burn the computer at the office to the ground so he could fix an awful problem that I created because I trusted that somebody was trying to help me and I gave them access to the computer. And it turned out that they weren't trying to help me at all. They were trying to scam me. And poor Ted came down here and spent hours burning the computer, all the internals of the computer, wiped everything out, then rebuilt everything and slapped me around for a while because I deserved it. And now I don't have the password that would let me do that. Anybody work in corporate America and you have an IT department and you can't do certain things on your computer? That's because we trust people who are trying to hurt us. I wish that wasn't the case, but in part, I don't trust people. The internal component is because I look at myself and I know that I fail. And so when somebody else says the same thing that I said, I attribute my failures to them. And that's not reasonable. But nevertheless, that's one of the things that happens when you trust men. Okay. Any comments on this comparison? Trust God, don't trust men. We'll go on to the next section of this. Yes, Vincent.
Observation, the word. You know, you look at the look, the always fact check, you know?
You're right. And you're absolutely right. We're going to get to that. Hang on to that thought. We're going to get there. Yeah, Ted.
Just building on that, what I was thinking of was when Paul commented on the Macedonians and simply doing it. Liberians, that they were always digging into the word to verify that what he was telling them was accurate. That the idea that even Paul an apostle, these Bereans were making sure that he was saying correct things.
True. fruit. Let me, the next part that I wanted to discuss was acknowledging God in all of our ways, but you've skipped ahead a little bit. So let's go to the last part of what we were going to discuss and think about how God directs us. How does he tell us what to do? And the first thing, of course, that comes to mind is through his word. He's given us this. So pay attention to this. And God never wrote anything in here that was intended to deceive you. You know, sometimes we think about the parables or even the book of Revelation. We think, well, God wrote it that way so that people who were opposed to him wouldn't be able to see it. Right? You ever get that thought that some things are kind of hidden in code? And if you don't know the code, you won't be able to see it. That's not the way the Bible works. God never wrote anything to keep people from understanding it. That's why Paul said to the Galatians, he was given the abundance of these revelations. He says, this is the way he says it in the King James translation, which I wrote afore in a few words, whereby when you read, you will understand my knowledge in the mystery of Christ. It was, nothing was ever written to obscure what you were needing to know. Now, that does mean, like Vincent and Ted were suggesting, you have to spend time reading your Bible. Or you can be misled. You really have to spend the time to look at what God said. And it's not good enough to just listen to what people tell you God said. I think I've told you the story before about the first graduate class that I took from my faculty advisor. There were only six people in this class, so you really couldn't kind of sit in the back and keep your head down and be invisible. You were pretty much right there. And he asked a question about B.F. Skinner, and I said, well, I know all about B.F. Skinner. You know me. I know all about B.F. Skinner. And he said that there's nothing that goes on in the black box. The black box is what you think. There's nothing that goes on in the black box. Well, he looked at me and said, you have, of course, read Science and Human Behavior that B.F. Skinner wrote in 1952. And I said, no, I haven't read that, but I've read several reviews of it. He said, when you've finished reading it, come back and we'll talk about it. So I went to the library that night. I checked out B.F. Skinner, 1952, Science and Human Behavior, read the book, found out that what the reviewer said about the book was all wrong. And I returned to class hat in hand and, got suitably beaten around the head and shoulders. Don't read the reviews. Read what people say. Don't listen to the way that it's characterized in the news or the way it's characterized on TikTok or the way it's characterized on X. Actually read the news. Yeah, Bob.
I would even say as far as the Bible goes, we really need to be careful of what translations that we're using. Instead of taking the easy way out, because it's so much easier to read, I personally think we need to stick with the older translations.
Sometimes you have to be aware. Translators sometimes they don't translate. They put their biases in there, just like they did with the King James, right? Can't put in the word immerse. You have to just make up a word, because if you put in the word immerse, King James is going to cut your head off. So they did. They built in their biases. Yeah, Carol.
The internal voice that you have moving you, or coloring what you're reading, or tickling your ears.
Okay, that's true. How many times have you heard people who were talking about Jesus' statement, "He that hurt that hates not his father, mother, is not worthy of me." Oh, but Jesus didn't mean hate. We try to avoid the clear implications rather than accept them. And you know, money is the root of all evil. No, it's not money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money is the root of all evil. So, yeah, it's that internal voice that reads the words and says, but it's gotta mean this. That's the internal voice that's getting us in trouble. Now, there are two other ways that I think God directs our steps. One is by his providence. And this is kind of like God lays out a path that's in the Word. And you're getting along on the path and you get to a point where you wonder, what am I supposed to do here? I think in God's providence, He can take steps to make it clear what he wants you to do. Now that, you know, don't overthink this. Don't get carried away. When I was asked to come and preach here, I had been out of preaching for 20 something years. I'd been in higher ed. I was working for the state of Oregon. I was doing research. You know, I loved what I was doing and thought I was going to go to Western Oregon and do research at Western Oregon. And the elders approached me and said, we'd like for you to come and preach here. Now, I hadn't preached in over 20 years. I preached for 20 years and then 26 years and then stopped. Got into higher ed, and I talked to Kim about it. She said, you know, maybe, and I say that with a big quotation mark around it, maybe that's God saying, this is what I want you to do. So I look at providence and I think, well, maybe the changes that God is setting before me is God trying to lead me. And I think we have to be aware of that. His path is not always the path of least resistance. Sometimes the path that he lays out before us is a difficult one. Sometimes it's an easy one, but many times it's a path that requires some effort. If you take the path of least resistance, you're always going to wind up downstream. Yeah, Carol.
I think it has to do with God's providence. His word never goes out void. So if you think about God's word and doing what's right, I think of a story I heard about kids who stole somebody's car. And the only two people survived was the one person who couldn't fit in. And the one who put his seatbelt on. The providence of God, if you say, well, I need to do this, sometimes that's what saves you, even though you were doing something wrong. He was watching over you.
Yeah.
Ordinance to watch.
Yeah.
A lot of times we face choices, and those choices that we face are in our life because God wanted them to be. Now, I still have free will, okay? But sometimes God is going to give me the option. Make sure that I have that option. And I have commented before on David's post when he was doing all that work up in Idaho, and he finished the job and he was so glad that he was going to be at home. And I can't say that God did that, but I can say maybe God did that. Because that was a good thing. I just can't say. You lose your job. Maybe God has another choice for you to make that you wouldn't have even considered if you hadn't lost your job. So, listen to God's leading. Listen to God's direction. There's one more thing I want you to think about, and we're just not going to have enough time to develop this the way that I would really like to develop this. But I think God also directs us by an informed conscience. If you train yourself with God's word, you develop an internal understanding of what you ought to be doing. Okay? And I wish we had time to read all of these passages, and you know, we will get to it. That's the good thing about preaching every Sunday, because you may not get to everything that you wanted to get to, but we will. Listen to your conscience. First, inform your conscience. But if your conscience tells you, you know, this just doesn't feel right, listen to that. I think that may be God giving you direction. Okay? I always told my girls, if you're ever in a situation and it just doesn't feel right, listen to your gut. Listen to your conscience. That, and I have said before, I don't think conscience ever defines what right and wrong is. I think that's what God does. But if God defines right and wrong, and I train my conscience to listen to that, then my conscience can keep me going in the right direction. I wish we had more time. I'd like to develop this idea. Any comments or thoughts as we bring this to a close? Anything from somebody online? Okay, well, we'll keep thinking about this idea of how God leads us. And I think it's something that we need to develop. We need to understand.